This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
You're listening to the Momwell Podcast. Today, I am excited to welcome back Dr. Cindy Hevington, creator of Curious Neuron, to the show. Curious Neuron is a science-based parenting platform that focuses on children's social and emotional learning and parental well-being. Dr. Cindy previously appeared on our episode, Managing Tantrums According to Science, when she brought her insight on tapping into the why behind our children's behavior. But today, she's here to focus not on our children's emotional regulation, but on our own. So many moms I talk to feel stuck. They know what they're supposed to do as parents to show up for their children. They have read books or blogs about scripts and gentle boundaries and how to be responsive, respectful, gentle parents. Then they end up in triggering situations and often find themselves unable to stay regulated. But there's a fine line between wanting to do better, to break cycles, and to support our children, and lacking self-compassion or holding ourselves to unrealistic standards. Today, Dr. Cindy and I discuss why the goals of never yelling or staying calm all the time set us up for failure, and what the goal should be instead. We unpack how our childhood plays a role and the importance of unlearning in cycle breaking. And we talk about regulation, emotional awareness, nuance, and self-compassion as we strive to be more responsive instead of reactive. But before jumping in, I wanted to make sure you've heard about my new book, Releasing the Mother Load: How to Carry Less and Enjoy Motherhood More. And I want to take a moment to share a quote with you. We have believed for so long that we should take on everything motherhood throws at us without complaint, without resistance, that it's hard to allow ourselves to see a different way to mother. In the book, I unpack the why behind the invisible load of motherhood, from intensive mothering to gender norms, and how we can break away from those beliefs and advocate for ourselves and our needs. This book includes both the deep work to break patterns and practical tips and takeaways to start releasing and redistributing labor right away. Head to ericajossa.com to order your copy. Now let's hear my conversation with Dr. Cindy Hevington, creator of Curious Neuron. Welcome to the Momwell Podcast, where we're committed to helping you cope with the load of motherhood. I'm your host, registered psychotherapist, and founder of Momwell, Erica Jossa. At Momwell, we know that motherhood is hard, but care shouldn't be. We're committed to providing you with knowledge, tools, and support to navigate the challenges of motherhood. Our mission is to put moms back on the priority list and empower them to create a mental wellness toolbox free from judgment, fear, and shame. On the show, we'll be discussing topics such as postpartum depression, identity loss, the mental load of motherhood, and more. We'll be joined by experts, moms, and professionals who can offer advice, practical tips, relatable stories, and honest conversations. Here at Momwell, we believe that when a mom is well, a baby is well. So join us as we discuss the topics that matter to you with experts who get it. Together, we can redefine motherhood and change the way moms are treated. Dr. Cindy, thank you so much for taking the time to join us back here again today. We were just off air reminiscing that you were here for episode 43, which was Managing Tantrums According to Science.
Right.
Just a little bit of time ago, you know.
Right.
Just a while back, but so excited to have you here with us. Thanks again for joining.
It doesn't feel like it's been that long ago, but time passes by so quickly, and I'm really happy that we're reconnecting again.
I know. I'm like, when I started my Instagram page like 2 years ago, and then I'm like, wait a minute, it's been almost 5 years now. Time has just gone into this weird warp of the pandemic and
I know
all of the things. But yeah, it's been some time. Considering that it's been a while, how are things over at Curious Neuron? Look, what are you up to? It's been ages.
It has. Yeah. You know, things are going well. We've grown our audience as well. And for me, it's just been about like figuring out how to get that science out to parents in a way that makes sense to them. So right now we're building a digital platform and we're working really hard behind the scenes to launch this year. So it's little bits and pieces here and there. And I also became the co-founder of an app called WonderGrade last year or the year before now. And it's an app that helps parents teach their kids how to cope with emotions. I just felt like there was a lot out there in terms of mindfulness and meditation that was directed at the child. But as we're going to talk about today, there's such a big piece that has to do with the parent and the environment that they're creating. So we felt that we had to bring both. It's about helping the parent support their child.
That's so interesting and exciting. I believe last we spoke, you were just getting into courses and figuring out how to package this information in a way to get it out. But right. An app that helps to sort of coach parents and walk them through feels so tangible and helpful. So congratulations. What an accomplishment.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. One of the things that came up this past week or so, as we're recording this just past the new year, is we were talking about ins and outs in stories. Like, what's in for this year and what do we want more of and what do we want to leave behind in 2023? Mm-hmm. And an overwhelming amount of moms in my stories responded that they want to leave all the yelling and all of the dysregulation in its many forms that it comes
right
behind. There was a lot of guilt, you know, in those responses. And we don't want to yell and we want to just parent differently. And while that is a noble goal, absolutely, like, I would love for us to explore a bit today whether that is like a realistic expectation for ourselves. Is that a science-aligned necessity in order to raise well-adjusted, healthy children, you know? Because while we talk a lot on our page about doing the work to parent differently, we also need to have grace and compassion for ourselves. And I feel like that part we're often missing.
Right. You know, I think it is a goal that we can have, but I think we need to be realistic. It's not going to happen overnight and it's going to take a lot of work. And I think that's the piece that sometimes gets frustrating, because as soon as we feel like we're doing well and we haven't yelled and we use that as the goal, and I don't think that should be the goal, and we can talk about that.
Yeah.
I truly feel that there are baby steps to that and that we should kind of hone in on like the feeling when we accomplish it once or twice, and that's okay. And we cannot expect to never yell. We are human. We have our own emotions and, you know, some things play into it, like being tired or stress or whatever it is. And I just feel like we make it an all or none thing. And that's where the self-compassion piece needs to come in, right? It's either I'm never going to yell again, and when I do yell, I've failed. And if we can change that sort of thinking and mindset, we can realize that there are ups and there are downs, and some days are going to be better than others, and that's okay. But there are patterns that we want to, you know, look at in our home. And if we're following those patterns 70 or 80% of the time, that's a good thing. It's a good environment to be in. So I hear the same thing. You know, lots of moms have a lot of guilt for yelling. Mm-hmm. And I wish that we could remove that guilt, because it would make it a bit easier, right? That self-compassion piece, that self-kindness. If our own friend were to tell us, you know, I had a bad day, I yelled at my child, what would we say to them? You know, what would we say to them in that moment? And usually it's not, wow, you failed miserably today as a parent. We would never say that to them. We would show up with compassion, but we struggle to do that with ourselves. So that compassion piece that you mentioned is truly one of the most important steps in all of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that black and white piece that you're mentioning, I think that's what stood out to me. Mm. Because when I asked, what do we want to leave behind in 2023? I don't know that I expected people to say losing my cool or yelling or like becoming dysregulated. Mm. I mean, maybe on some level I did, but to expect of ourselves to leave that behind and not behave that way again is so all or nothing and such an unfair expectation of ourselves.
Yes.
Right. Exactly. And like you're saying, maybe our goal wants to be like 70% of the time, or like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I like to break it into like ratios where maybe out of 10 interactions, I lose it two or three times.
Right.
I keep it together the other majority of the time. And you know what? We're trending in a good direction. Mm-hmm. It just feels like there's more of those shades of gray and room for incremental improvement, as you were saying.
Right.
We get really stuck in this all or nothing. And what I see happen is there's a lot on social media about breaking cycles. There's a lot about being a gentle and responsive and respectful parent. There's a lot of pressure parents put on themselves and also get from others to do no harm and don't traumatize and raise well-adjusted children, that it becomes so high stakes in every moment. And we set our sights on, I want to parent differently than my parents did, and I don't want to raise my voice, and I don't want to do these things. just committing ourselves and saying that out loud doesn't tangibly give us the skills in the day to day to actually do it differently or walk it out.
Yeah.
And one of the things in prep for this interview and the questions that you had submitted and mentioned was, we are often learning how to do this ourselves because we were never taught.
Exactly.
While also trying to model and teach it for our children. And that is a tension and a pressure that's just not talked about enough.
Right. It's a lot, right? We're learning while we are unlearning.
Yeah.
And that piece is just so hard, and nobody or not enough people talk about it, because even myself, coming out of my research, I was studying emotions and I was like, all right, tantrums. I mean, I've never experienced a tantrum in my life, but I understand emotions. I understand co-regulation. I understand emotion regulation skills. I've got this. And I'll never forget when my firstborn started having big emotions. And I was like, whoa, hold on a second. What's going on here? Like, I'm calm, I'm regulated, and you're still losing it. And now my internal dialogue was changing. And now all of a sudden, it hit me how important it was for me to understand that in myself, not just my child. Mm-hmm. And that piece, I had never done the work for, you know, I had never gone to therapy. Well, I had as a teenager once or twice, but just not as an adult. And I had never really done the work that I needed to do to understand why I was losing it. And I started yelling at her. And then that guilt came in really quickly, because it was like, I was raised by a single mom who just every emotion came out as angry, you know, like it was just, right. She was always upset about something, but it was her anxieties around, you know, will my daughter and my son do well in life? Am I messing this up as a single parent? And I didn't see that, only now as an adult and after my own therapy. But if I would have ignored that, I would have continued down the path of being triggered and feeling just very out of control with a lot with my children. And that did happen, especially after my third, where I did lose control. I had a bit of the awareness, but I wasn't doing the work that I needed to do.
Right.
So the language I often hear from moms is, I go from 0 to 100 very quickly. And I always tell them that the 2 to 99 are there. We're just sometimes not aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So part of that emotional intelligence piece is emotional awareness, understanding what that feels like in our body. And we're very quick to, this is not a scientific term, but I call them micro emotions, because it helps remind me that we are going through so much in like 1 minute, right? Like we're getting ready for work and our kids are screaming. They don't want to get ready. They don't want to wear that pair of pants or the socks. And we're like, just get dressed. And then we have to make sure we have everything ready. And then we might have an argument with our partner. So in a span of 30 minutes, we might have experienced 10 micro little emotional moments that are building up. They're not going away if we don't cope with them.
Mm-hmm.
So our day continues. We carry that on. Our body and our nervous system is dysregulated to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
We go to work. We do whatever it is. We think we're okay. We come back. And our child says one thing to us in the car, or when we get home, they have their first tantrum and we lose it.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't really 1 to 100, right? It wasn't that quick. It was actually the one started that morning and we didn't regulate. We didn't cope with it. We didn't manage that feeling internally. And then it comes out as a blowout, right? Like I experienced rage.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that awareness piece is really important. And once we start understanding that a lot more in ourselves, then we see it very similarly in our kids,
mm-hmm.
right? A child, we had spoken about tantrums before, but that tantrum is a dysregulation. What is happening internally with that child? Are they feeling frustrated? Are they feeling lonely? Are they feeling disappointed? Whatever that emotion is, are they feeling overwhelmed by the senses around them, the sound, the noise, the touch of a sibling that's jumping on top of them? We don't see that. We just see the external piece of that emotion regulation aspect. And emotions occur internally and externally.
Mm-hmm.
So we experience some sort of buildup or an emotion. Our brain makes predictions in terms of what's next. I'm going to feel angry because this is happening. And then we blow up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the external piece. Whether it's our child having a tantrum or us blowing up. We can also call it a tantrum if we want to. Sometimes it feels like that.
Sometimes I'd love to just roll around on the floor and scream and cry like a toddler meltdown. Yeah. Sometimes I want that to be me, right?
Yeah. Well, sometimes I have my own form of that, you know, where I've lost complete control of my emotions. And I yell in a way that I'm like, why did I do that? But in that moment, we're dysregulated and our brain isn't really thinking of what to do rationally.
Mm-hmm.
So our children experience that and we do as well. So we really do why, I don't know how we ended up here, but we really do need to think about, you know, how our emotions are being impacted by our environment and how our level of dysregulation is. Because the more we can do that and be aware of that, we'll be able to support our child through co-regulation a lot more. And there's a word that you said before, and I think there are two things. Calm is something that I think we need to talk about. Mm-hmm. And also the type of parenting that we hear about through social media or anywhere online.
Yeah.
There are so many misconceptions, and it comes back to the word calm. I feel that, you know, you hear about this positive parenting, whatever you want to call it, conscious parenting. I'm okay with whatever term we want to use, but I think the definition has been somewhat misunderstood, and we've kind of swung the pendulum to the side, like to an extreme of us supporting our kids and their emotional development. Somehow, lost in translation, it has become us always having to be calm. And that, there was a study that came out last year, and they looked at parents who follow positive parenting, and they're often more stressed.
Isn't that something?
There's more stress on these parents, because when you have to stay calm and you're experiencing an emotion, you're suppressing your emotions. And when you're suppressing your emotions, that's harder on your mental health and your emotional well-being. So what do we mean as a society when we keep telling people to stay calm? Because it's not possible.
Right. And it's like, it's the pendulum swinging in the opposite direction, right? So you've got the soda bottle exploding on one end, like just all that pressure building up until it just pops off. And then you've got clamming it up, shutting it down, you know, gritting your teeth and smiling your way through it like you're some kind of robot.
Right.
And it's just unrealistic to expect that of ourselves, and unhealthy.
It is.
Mealtime with kids can be stressful, but with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals, it can be a lot easier. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. No worrying about ingredients and nutrition, no prep, no mess, and no cooking while wrangling toddlers. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. Factor can even be tailored to your schedule. Customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. Take the stress out of meals with Factor. Head to factormeals.com/momwell50 and use code MOMWELL50 to get 50% off your first box. Want to get smarter about your health but feel overwhelmed trying to separate fact from fiction? We hear a lot about gut health, microbiomes, and other nutrition topics, but taking the time to research these is exhausting, and there's a lot of misinformation out there. The Zoe Science and Nutrition podcast makes it so much easier to get the information you need. With the help of world-leading scientists, the podcast gives you research-based information so you can make informed choices for yourself without pressure and guilt. People are loving Zoe Science and Nutrition. Listener Stephanie's Apple Review says the Zoe Science and Nutrition podcast is a life-changing, science-based, myth-busting podcast. That's a must-listen for anyone who eats food and wants to understand how it affects their body. With the Zoe Science and Nutrition podcast, you can join Stephanie and millions of others accessing quality information about their health. Find it wherever you listen to podcasts. One of the things that I think about as you're talking about the micro emotions and being in tune with yourself is I would often use a therapy worksheet or skill from CBT called like an emotions thermometer or a body thermometer.
Right.
Where you map out, you know, what your body feels like when it's calm and relaxed, up to when you're angry and losing your cool and exploding, and work with clients on understanding the clues and the building up of that temperature in them. We know calm and relaxed, though we might not have experienced it lately. We can typically describe what that feels like. We can describe the volcano erupting, and we know what that feels like. But we do not. Many clients have such a hard time filling out any of that in between, as you had mentioned.
I believe it.
And there's a couple of things here that I feel like if I take like a wider lens for a moment and unpack is one, as women, we have been gaslit and told we're overly sensitive and told that we are being dramatic and invalidated in our emotions and experience a lot throughout life.
Right.
We've also been taught to not trust our bodies. And what I mean by that is if you're hungry, it's past seven, don't eat. If you feel this way, then don't do that. And like our bodies have become this thing that we feel is working against us and our appetite is evil. And like there is just this complex relationship with our own trust with ourselves and our intuition. So we kind of go dark to ourselves in those clues. Like we kind of shut them down, don't pay attention to them, don't listen to them.
Yeah.
While on the other hand, also, if we've come through traumatic environments, we may have been hypervigilant to others around us. I bring that up to say we have the skills sometimes, albeit we may have gained them through traumatic experiences or people-pleasing, maybe not ideal, but we have the ability to pick up the subtleties.
Right.
We often have that skill, but we don't know how to turn it towards ourselves often.
It's that connection piece or that attunement.
Yeah. Mm. And it's difficult. I think that sometimes we can even have that skill and see and attune and see when our child is escalating, but still be totally disconnected from our own clues and attunement to ourselves. Like, so I know that we have the skill, like I know that we can do it, but there's a barrier or something there that blocks us with being able to see that within ourselves. Maybe that's the pressure and the expectations. And then we look around and nobody else is feeling this way. So again, we shove it all down or we ignore it or we push it down. And I feel like that correlates with that, like you said, that extra added stress or pressure that comes with this positive parenting. I feel like it adds more stress. It adds more pressure.
It does, because it's saying, well, if you want your child to behave a certain way or, you know, to develop a certain way, you need to be calm all the time. It's not realistic. And that's why, you know, I think it's really important for us to talk about this, because I think there are so many moms out there that just see like any moment of not being calm is going to ruin your child. You know, I'm using that language. It's intense, but it's the language I've heard.
Yes, exactly.
Literally, like moms will tell me, like, have I ruined my child because I yelled? And I said, you know, first, there's a lot more. I can't just say no. I need to know their environment. What does the environment look like? But just yelling at your child is not considered something that will ruin your child.
Yeah.
But the relationship that you are building with them, the modeling of emotion regulation skills they are seeing through you, that's a different story. That is something that we do need to be mindful of. So I would say as a goal for moms that are listening, if you are, you know, struggling with yelling a lot, it's to turn it onto you and to say, what are my needs this year? What unmet needs do I have that I've been ignoring for so long? Let me come back to my roots and my values. What brings me joy? You know, sometimes I just bring that up with moms and they're like, I don't know. I used to do this or I used to do that and I don't anymore. And I was one of those moms, like, reading books after I had kids, I just stopped because my world revolved around them. And if that's the way that I did it, then I was a good mom. And I forgot that in order to be a good mom, I also needed to remind myself that I mattered, if not even more now, because I had to be there for my kids. And there's this feeling that we have sometimes that the self-care, which I believe is learning how to love yourself truly and unconditionally, that self-care feels like it's selfish, but it's not. It's truly not. So coming back to us and the work, I know we talk about work all the time and sometimes it's like overwhelming, right? It's like, what do I have to do more now in my day? Like, I don't have time to learn every day. I don't have time to take all these courses and whatever it is, but it's truly not about that. It's about in those moments showing up for yourself. So to me, what that looks like is if I'm seeing my three kids and they're starting to argue, I have to first get in touch with Cindy. And in my head, I'll just say things like, I'm really tired and I can't deal with this. I'll do the best that I can. Or I've got this, you know, like, okay, I have good energy right now. We're going to get through this. And I do show up, you know, and I try to show up as best as I can. And there are moments where I'll tell my kids, I can't deal with this. I don't have the capacity. My cup is full. But my kids are a bit older. They're 4, 6, and 8 now. So I can say things like, I'm going to deal with this in about 3, 4 minutes. I just need to step back and take a breath.
Yeah.
And they're used to hearing me say that. And now my 8-year-old and even my 6-year-old once or twice has said, like, I'm going to step away from my brother and my sister because I'm getting really mad right now.
Yeah.
So that's the modeling that we want them to see. Not that we never feel frustrated or not that we never feel sad or anxious or mad. We want to show them that that's a normal part of life. But we also want to show them that there are ways to cope with it. And sometimes we don't cope with it the way that we want to. And that happens. Mm-hmm. But thank goodness for repair and being human and coming back and having conversations around, hey, you know, I'm really sorry. You know, mommy was really tired and mommy's tired and I just lost my cool and I didn't mean to do that. So let's play Uno together. Let's just, before you go to bed, take a moment to connect. Mm-hmm. Right. So there's so much more than just the piece of staying calm. Mm. And that word doesn't show up in research. It's responsive.
Interesting. Interesting.
If we can switch calm to being responsive,
okay,
I think it lessens the burden on us, right? Because you and I can have an argument and I can be really mad at you, but I could be responsive to your emotions, right? And still hold space for my emotions. I can say, you know, Erica, I don't like the way you spoke to me and I see that you're frustrated about it, but that wasn't right. I'm just going to step back and come back to our conversation in 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. I've showed up for myself. I've set the boundary that I can't right now. And I've also responded to you. So I'm showing up for you. And as a parent, that's what your child wants. That's what they need. That responsiveness is not about ignoring them. When I say I step away from them, I'm not ignoring it and never coming back to it. I'm just showing up for myself in that moment. I'm responding to them by saying, I see you guys are having trouble right now. Everybody step away from each other, grab a book. Nobody talks to each other for 5 minutes and I'll be back and we'll deal with this. Mm-hmm. I'm being responsive. I'm not ignoring, but then I'm coming back to it and having the conversation I need to have with them when I'm more regulated. Like, that's what I mean.
Yeah. And you're coming back to it because what happens when we aren't in tune with that building, like bomb building, I call it, kind of just like the pressure in that pop bottle shaking,
right,
is two things usually happen. One, we either explode and we raise our voice and we lash out, but maybe you're not a yeller. Maybe that's not what you do. With me sometimes, and I really more of a yeller now than I was postpartum, but postpartum, what would happen with me is I would hit a level and it was like the kill switch went off and I would almost not like dissociate, but I would zone out.
Right.
I would avoid, I would check out. I was way out of my threshold for the day and the situation. And so it almost comes with a bit of a flatness, like, you know, just done.
Right.
Done, over it, at capacity.
Right. Yeah.
And so we have this threshold. And if we get outside of it, we cannot cope. Mm-hmm. We can't. We're not going to cope. Can't. So knowing that and learning how to stay within that range, that doesn't mean perfectly calm voice with a smile on your face. Like, I can have a conversation with my children and be like, mommy is getting extremely frustrated right now.
Right.
And the serious, deep, low voice comes out. And like, we're all going to go to our own rooms and have our own quiet time. But then we come back after. This is so important when it comes to the responsiveness piece, because we are not checking out. We are not avoiding. We are not being dismissive.
Right.
We are taking a break and then coming back so that they don't feel abandoned in their experience.
Exactly.
And they know that we will circle back around, right? Because I imagine like being in an argument with my partner, if we hit that threshold, it's like, this is stressing me out. And then I like go take a drive and we never talk about it again after. That's abandonment.
Right.
That doesn't feel like a break.
Right.
Right. That's not a pause. That's not the pause button. That is a
avoidance.
An abandonment in that moment. Avoidance.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that circling back around piece is so important. Mm. It's so important. And this whole like in for this year, I like that responsiveness and calm. Calm is out.
Can we please?
Not out like entirely,
sort of.
But like.
Well, there are times for calm as well, right? Like co-regulation, that too is being used a lot. And it has to do, yes, you need to stay calm, but you're thinking also about, if my child is feeling dysregulated, it shouldn't always dysregulate me. If it is, then I need to look into that.
Interesting. Yeah.
Because if my, I don't know, if my 2-year-old is playing with a sibling and I'm cooking and I see that the sibling isn't sharing the toy, now my 2-year-old's starting to scream and is grabbing the toy out of them, that shouldn't trigger me completely. I should be able to have a sense of calm to co-regulate with that two-year-old to teach them that they are in a safe environment. This moment is not as bad as their brain is making it seem. I'm kind of being their brain for them in that moment. I'm helping them rationalize the environment and help them build the predictions they need in their brain for later. Like, it's that co-regulation piece is really important.
Yeah.
So again, you know, it's not an all or none thing. So that calm piece does come into play, but it doesn't come into play every single time. And especially if it's your kids like ignoring you, or it's some, like, I don't know, your child runs into the middle of the street. Obviously, you're not going to be like, hey, right. Sam, come back. Like, it's going to be like, come back here now. You know, like, that's okay.
Yeah.
I had spoken to some parents who had never yelled at their kids and said, like, we don't want to damage our daughter. And I brought the example of like, what do you do when she runs into the street or something happens that's dangerous? And they said, no, we never yell. We need to stay calm. I'm like, no, that's okay.
It's appropriate.
Right?
Safety. You alert the threat.
Exactly. So I don't want parents to fear raising their voice or yelling at their kids, but I just want them to keep that word responsive in their mind. Am I responding to my child and not ignoring it? But also during those moments when I need to co-regulate with my child and help bring a sense of calm to their nervous system, can I do that? Can I show up for my own kid, especially kids under the age of 4 or 5?
Yeah.
Mostly under 4. By 4 or 5, they should be finding moments of calm on their own and regulating a little bit more. But like 4 and under, they're still looking for you, you know, to kind of help them regulate. So we have to be there and show up for them. But we can't do that if we haven't shown up for ourselves first. So
the
calm is there, but just not every single time. And that's okay.
Mom rage often leads us to feeling ashamed. But the truth is that our rage doesn't mean we're bad moms. In fact, anger is a sign from our bodies that our needs aren't being met. As moms and therapists, Dr. Ashiri Naream, Psyched Mommy, and I understand mom rage. We know that we all lose our cool sometimes. And we also know that with the right tools and strategies in place, those moments happen less often. We've teamed up and combined our years of experience to create All the Rage, Raising Kids with Less Anger and More Connection, a course designed to be your go-to resource for preventing and handling your anger. We dive into what causes your anger, how it impacts your body, how to reframe your thinking, and how to stay calm in triggering moments. And because we are all human, we also include strategies for repairing after we inevitably lose our cool. In honor of Maternal Mental Health Week, you can save $20 on the course with promo RAGE20 this week only. Don't miss out on your chance to save and make a positive change. Head to momwell.com/rage and save with code RAGE20. That's momwell.com/rage, code RAGE20.
It reminds me of something that Dr. Becky Kennedy introed when we were chatting about behavior in kids and tantrums. And she talked about being the steady pilot.
Right.
Like when you're going through a crisis situation, if the pilot comes on and is frantic trying to get everyone's attention, everyone's going to feel really anxious and out of sorts and uncertain about the situation. But if they come on with confidence and a steady, like, assuredness, we feel like we're going to make it through the situation differently. And I kind of equate it to that. But I will say, I want to flesh out this idea for just a second, because I'm going to say not all yelling is equal.
Sure.
So, for example, I'm joking about the fact that I yell more now than I did 9 years ago. And that's 100% true. But what happens is, picture bedtime routine, children ages 6. Wait, where are we at in life? 8, 5, and 6. Did that out of order. And they are bananas, jumping off the wall, jumping on the bed, ninja fighting. Someone's for sure going to get hurt because they are like, they are jumping off the walls, right? And it's not uncommon for me in a situation to be like, God, brush your teeth. Ah, like this is so chaotic, you know? And that is like a different experience than a yelling that is directed at your child for their behavior or inducing shame or turns into name calling or go brush your teeth because you're like, you never listen. Right. You never do this. Like,
yeah.
Raising our voices, not all on equal ground right. here. Like, let's just get it straight for a second, you know?
Thank you for saying that. Yes.
Because yes. I will, like, get in the car. You're going to be late for school. Kind of like raised voice or like sense of urgency
yeah.
is not equal to the like, you suck right. kind of messaging that can come yeah. from a very top down authoritative reaming out.
Yes.
And so I think that that's so important to keep in frame and in perspective mm-hmm. because like my kids get like that with me too. If we're in a rush and we're getting out the door and everyone's like a little snippy because we're all like trying to get things moving, it's kind of like you understand it given the context of the situation and we're going to still be respectful. No one's slinging insults mm. at each other.
No.
But we're all kind of like wound up,
right.
you know, and that's totally different.
You know, about a year and a half ago, I forget what we were doing, but I raised my voice at my kids. But I also said something like, out now, you know, and it had never come out that way. And I was just at my breaking point.
Yeah.
And I noticed their eyes change and their face changed. And I went to speak with them after because I always take the time to come back to it and repair and apologize whenever yeah. I need to. And I asked them, how did it make you feel when I said it that way? And they're like, it didn't make me feel good.
Yeah.
And I said, I apologize and that will never happen again. And it didn't. It never happened again. And I keep reminding them that if ever I speak to you in a way that doesn't make you feel good, let me know, because it might come out again one day, who knows, but I don't want to speak to you that way. There's one thing about yelling, the like anxiety-ish kind of like, for me, it's just like, oh my God, we're going to be late. Like get in the car. Like you said, right? Like
the overstimulation, right. the anxiety, the
or
like
the bedtime.
Yeah. That hustle bustle.
Yeah. Right. The bedtime one for me, that's just like, brush your teeth. Come on. Like, and then you're right. They're jumping on the bed. The nighttime routine you described is my house every single night.
It's like, how many times must I say,
right.
Brush your stinking teeth, you know?
Exactly.
And so, yeah. yeah.
But that respect piece, like, it doesn't matter if it's your kids or your partner or a friend or a family member. You can be angry at somebody, but still respect them and treat them with respect in the argument, right? You can even be like really frustrated. And this is something my husband and I, we've been together for like since we were teenagers and we've never called each other a name. We've never yeah. disrespected each other in an argument. And we could be mad. We can step away. We can not talk for a day or two if we're just at the point where we need to like collect our thoughts, but never, never, ever disrespecting. No name calling, even with my kids. That doesn't feel good. It comes back to what I've said to my kids, right? If ever I say something to you that doesn't make you feel good, if I were to say like you're lazy or if I start labeling them, I don't want to say who they are. They have to figure that out on their own. You know, like if they feel like they're not putting the motivation, right. I'm not saying that I want them to call themselves lazy, but I don't want to label them. That's not what I do. Like, I want to motivate them.
Well, this becomes our internalized voice.
It does.
If this is what they hear from you, this is what they internalize.
Right.
And I think what we're really saying is that the content of what we say, I'm going to say matters more than how we say it. And that might not be true in every case. I'm sure that there are cases where that's not always true.
No, I would say that it's true. There's research around that.
Okay.
So there's studies around co-regulation and in 3 and 4 year olds and how they put moms in a room with a child and they put a lot of toys and then they ask them to clean up because that's the best scenario to get a mom really upset.
The power struggle, the distraction, the constant exactly. asking, all of that. Yeah,
exactly. And then the child becomes upset and then the mom becomes upset. But they are doing this on purpose because they want to see how they co-regulate. And what they noticed is that when a mother tends to have a tone of voice that is harsher according, you know, to the different tones of voice that they look at, right? There's warm, there's not warm, there's like harsher, whatever it is. Their body language as well, that it just doesn't make the child feel like supported. Again, it goes towards that responsiveness. So there's the language that they're using, the body language, the tone of voice, all of that will lead to a co-regulation that's sort of not in a healthy way. It's not helping the child feel safe and comforted by their caregiver and their parent. And then that leads to more behavioral issues.
Mm-hmm.
So that co-regulation piece and everything you just said, it actually does matter. It again, it's not about like you yelling and saying, get back in your room. Like, come on, brush your teeth. There's a lot to it. And all of that leads to how quickly your child will come down from their level of dysregulation. You know, if they're not bringing their stress levels down, then that will lead to struggles with their behavior because they're not getting that sense of calm. I guess we can use that word for now, but yeah. that's what they're struggling with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. And when I think about the few times that I've been pushed to like the out of character rage, right? You know, and maybe we've all had those times. Maybe we haven't. I certainly have, raising neurodivergent children, being neurodivergent myself. And I think about those few times, what starts to happen when you feel like you've lost all control over the situation is you grasp for control and power in a way that is beyond just raising your voice.
Right.
So that's where it teeters over into, like, can you just get your shit together? You know, like, can you, like, it becomes a you problem now when we're talking to our child versus a brush your freaking teeth, you know, like, it's
And so there's a difference.
There is a difference. Yeah. And it might seem subtle, but I don't think it's so subtle in the realm of how it's important for us to understand this. Like, maintaining that mutual respect and regard while being able to be human and fluctuate in our responses should be the goal. You know, like, I might be snippy with my partner when we're trying to get the kids out the door in the morning, and then we're past it because we know we're both like, it's just a different thing. So when we fall into these black all or nothings, like we talked about off the top, we don't allow for this human experience and we are focused on the wrong goal. And I love responsiveness as a goal. I love content and mutual regard and respect in disagreements or tantrum situations as a goal. Keeping a calm and still voice and being patient, nurturing, and kind always is not an appropriate goal from my perspective.
Right. No, I don't think it is either. And I think that if we can use that term in terms of like our guiding light and say like, that's what I want to work on, I think that goal is more attainable. I think that we can achieve that and saying I could show up and be responsive to my child, but that's not neglecting my needs. It's not telling me that I need to be calm 100% of the time. Like, I think it's truly something that we can all achieve with work. Obviously, it still requires a lot of work and practice.
Yeah. Well, and one of the pieces I think that gets so missed with this responsive, respectful, conscious parenting bit is that it's a responsiveness to our child at a cost of ourselves.
Yes.
We're missing the responsiveness to ourself part. Like, if we're responsive parenting and that's our jam, we need to be factored into this situation also. And often it's more of this self-martyrdom at a cost of ourselves.
Right.
It's not sustainable.
It's not sustainable. And we have to get rid of that idea that like putting us first is selfish. And I still struggle with that. I have to be completely honest with that. For me, it's just, you know, I forget about myself very easily and I have to keep reminding myself. I started journaling last year and that to me has been transformative in terms of reflecting on why, you know, like I did this today or I didn't do this today. Why? What happened? What was the thought that led to that or didn't lead to that? What was the emotion behind that? You know, how did I behave when I was thinking this? And just being able to make those connections allows me to kind of step back in certain situations and set the boundary that I need to sometimes, you know? And I think I only learned how to set boundaries in my late 30s. And I was like, why didn't I do this before? It feels so good most of the time. Yeah. Sometimes the other person isn't happy with it, but I've learned to be okay with that because we need that sometimes, you know, whether it's not always answering the phone when somebody calls. I've done that with people, with family members, because I know that I don't have the capacity right now to deal with a phone call where they're going to kind of like put all of their shame and their own issues on me. Sometimes I don't have the capacity for it. So I ignore the call and I'll text them or call them when I can. And it has felt so good to do that. And I would have looked at that a couple years ago. If we would have spoken a few years ago about that, I would have thought like, that's mean. But now I realize that it's not. It's actually the way that I show myself love and I show up for myself. And I think we need to really see that. Again, changing our sort of new goals for 2024, there's so much that factors into this calm aspect. We're going to change it to responsive and then we're going to put ourselves first. And when we do that, everything sort of falls into place without even realizing, right? There's going to be a day where it becomes the end of your day and you're like, wow, it's like 4 p.m. and I haven't yelled. Or like, I felt it happening, but I spoke to myself and I changed my mindset or I changed my thoughts and I was able to deal with my child getting angry. Like, wow, okay. It really hits you one day and you're like, okay, this is possible. And then the next day you might yell and that's okay. It's all part of it, but it really feels good to show up for yourself.
Yeah. And I talk about this in my book coming out in April. Sometimes putting yourself first or that notion feels so far of a stretch. We're so used to putting ourselves last and to martyring ourselves and to putting everybody else's needs first, that the concept of putting ourselves first feels out of touch. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I propose in the book is, what if we just put ourselves on equal playing field as our family? Mm. What if our needs just took a seat at the table as equal priority to the needs of our family members? So my child needs to have extracurricular activities for their social development, or they need to have social time for their social development, or they need to have regular baths and showers for their own hygiene and well-being. You know, some of them can be so fundamental and just basic care for ourselves, and others can be those more social pieces. But if my child is deserving, I'm also deserving. Right. Like, my needs can be on the same par as them. I will asterisk this to say, obviously, this is easier to practically roll out in some seasons over others.
Yes.
In postpartum, yes. I was lucky to sleep and shower and function. And so, like, the basic fundamental needs were really the focus. I wasn't looking at the social needs, but also my child, like, that wasn't their need in that season either. Like, our needs might fluctuate season to season. But if we can just say, like, would I make space for my partner or my child to do this? If the answer is yes, then I should be able to make space for this for myself, because my needs are equal to that of those in the family.
Mm-hmm. I love that you mentioned the seasons, because this is something I struggled with. I had a lot of friends that, you know, after having a child, they were working out, everything was back, and they were like, I'm great. Here I am going to the beach. I have my bikini on. And I was like, oh, I'm really far away from that.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of guilt because I wasn't managing my time. I felt like I wasn't managing my time properly, but I had three kids under the age of four at that point, and everybody was done having their kids, and I wasn't in the same season as they were. I was in a time where, for me, it just felt okay to be home. And now, X amount of years later, I realize that I wish I would have been kinder to myself during that time, because now I'm in the phase where there is time to schedule in workouts, and there is time to schedule in reading at nighttime before I go to bed. It's a bit different. And it's not like that every day. And I still end up in and out of those seasons as well. Like, if there's more work to be done for my company, then I'm not going to do that. Like, it depends. But I wish I would have been kinder to myself in retrospect. And I hope somebody listening to this, like, just because if you gave birth like 2 weeks ago, like, you don't have to start the journaling, the workouts, the walks, the meet and greets, the, you know, like, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves. And the more you're attuned with what you need, sometimes showing up isn't about like going for a 1 hour walk. If you can't, showing up for yourself can be being kind in your mind, right? Like, I always write down in the morning, I make a little box and I write personal, health, family, and work. Yeah, personal health. And I want to do a little something that makes me just tick that off by the end of the day when I come back to it. So personal could be, I drank my coffee hot, right? And I told my kids, like, let's sit and read, whatever it is. Health is, did I move? Even for 5 minutes, did I just show up, you know, and do something? Or maybe I'm reading something on an email and I'm like getting up and squatting or whatever it is. Or I ran up the stairs twice. It's literally 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. But by the end of the day, I like taking that off, because it's like, okay, I finished that one task for work and I feel good about that. I showed up for myself, my family. I don't know, we read an extra book at night, or we had dinner all together and we sat at the table. Check, check, check. And you're like, okay, these were really small things that I was able to do that makes me feel like complete right now. And I feel good. Mm-hmm. And I mean, in total, it probably took 2 minutes, right? It could be a thought. It could be anything. Mm-hmm. But just showing up in some way in a very small form makes a huge difference, I think, in your mindset.
A commitment to prioritize ourselves in those areas, right? And like prioritize or take inventory and note of those and make them like a priority or notable to us.
Right.
And so often we don't even do that for ourselves. I have an episode with Dr. Sundra on the different types of rest. Mm-hmm. And this was really fundamental in changing my idea that I had to go and do something like for self-care and for a reset, like I have to go and do, or I have to carve out big chunks of time. And she really breaks down in that episode that I have with her about tangible ways to do this kind of on the fly, because we carry so much mental, emotional, invisible labor that the last thing we want is another to-do on our list, right? So having something that feels like we can incorporate it into our routine and it be like work in terms of remembering it, but seamless in terms of not an added burden,
yeah,
it makes it more realistic and more feasible. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, just writing it down as a checkbox and write your name, Cindy, checkbox. And at the end of the day, did I show up for myself? I think it just keeps it at the top of your mind. Mm-hmm. And again, that showing up could be anything, but very small, you know, baby steps towards taking care of yourself.
Yeah. Mm. Okay. My final question for you is, since you're immersed in the research so much in these areas, I feel like, is there one really reassuring study or tidbit of research that you've come across in the past year or so that we might leave parents with? Anything specific that you read that stood out to you? Or
that's really hard. There's so many. Yeah. But I do want to say, I think maybe to me what stands out is parents often ask about, like, that, did I mess up my child? Mm. And what's very clear in the research is when you show up for your child, and showing up means building a relationship with them. They're not looking at if you yelled at them. We're looking at a bigger picture. And I think that we tend to really go micro into this, like, as a parent, like, if I yelled twice today, if I didn't give them what they wanted yesterday, like, how is that all messing up my child? And I think we need to step back a little bit. And what this research shows is connection. If we connect with our kids in meaningful ways, and this is why I spoke to a researcher last week from Colorado. I'll be interviewing her on my podcast next week. But her research showed that it's just 5 minutes of connection time per day that allows you to build that very healthy connection with your child. So I think we put a lot of burden, like you said before, you know, like, big time slots, right? Like, an hour for myself, an hour for my child, an hour for my partner every day. Well, hold on a second. I get an hour a day, you know, like, of after dinner. And how am I supposed to fit in 3 hours of connection time? Mm-hmm. It's 5 minutes with your child, 5 minutes of intentional being present time where you are focused on your child, showing up for them, where you could really build that strong connection with them. And then when you connect with your child, adversities that come into play sometimes in their childhood, you know, sometimes you don't have control over that. We can be in an environment that isn't safe. There's a lot of emails. I've been receiving a lot of emails from moms who are struggling, you know, in their homes that don't feel necessarily safe, and they worry about their child. So if you focus on your child in terms of connection, that helps with resilience, and it helps kind of alleviate or minimize the impact on their brain that some sort of adversities can have on them. So if there's one thing, I don't know if that's okay as a study, but
yeah, that's great.
To me, that stands out, like, connection, build that connection with your child. And I don't think that you can fully connect with your child if you're not fully connected with yourself. Not entirely, right? Like, I just really hope that moms that are listening to this realize the importance of tuning into themselves. And when they do that, it makes it easier to be present with your child. If you're feeling nurtured, you have to nurture yourself first. So that's what I would say is something that stands out to me.
I love that. I love that so much. It feels so tangible and doable.
Exactly.
And I feel like in this all or nothing parenting environment that we are in, when we hear about connection and we hear about presence, we think about being mindful and attuned 24/7 all the time. Like, we take this and we go to 100 with it, which is entirely unrealistic and will burn you to the ground trying to keep up with that.
Exactly.
But we have these reserved tuck-in times every night, and we kind of, like, magical beds, me and my husband, to rotate tuck-in time. I hear about all the friends. I hear about all the, like, that is the special, quiet, devoted time. It's like 5 or 10 minutes each child, and bedtime takes us 45 minutes or an hour, but, like, it's consistent. We get insight into their world, and it's undivided time to them. And those moments are so special, and we can start. I also limit them. Sometimes there's a timer on because we're not going to, you know, prolong it or take time away from your sibling and things. Like, there's still boundaries on that time, and that can be there, and that's perfectly okay. But it's a really practical, tangible place to start. So thank you so much.
It could be the car ride in the car, you know, like, we have to really simplify things. Things are tough enough.
Well, I appreciate you so much joining us today. Where can people hear more from you, learn more from you on your podcast and your app, all of that?
Yeah, so you can visit curiousneuron.com if you're looking for a blog or information that'll help you with effective parenting practices. But mostly, Curious Neuron is all about parental well-being, and you can find blog posts about that. I do have a podcast, Curious Neuron, available everywhere. We have a YouTube channel. And you can follow me on Instagram, curious_neuron. And then if you're interested, that's if you're interested in nurturing yourself. But on the other end, if you really want to help your child with their emotional learning and, you know, helping them build emotion regulation skills, wondergrade.com. You can get the app on Android or on Apple, Wondergrade on Instagram. And we have printables that come out for free every single Friday where you can just do a coloring activity with your child. And that's your 5-minute activity. So wondergrade.com and you click on printables. And I've just put out it's called The Reflective Parent. And it's a 100-page workbook of questions. So if you struggle with speaking up when you want to or struggle with boundaries, it's all these reflection prompts, like to walk you through what you should be doing to kind of start the work. So there's that available as well on my website.
It's amazing. And I value the resources that you put out there so much. We'll make sure to link all of those in the show notes so people can easily click through and find them and connect with you.
Thank you so much, Erica.
Yeah. I love the work you're doing.
Same.
Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I am very drawn to this idea of shifting our goalposts when it comes to parenting, moving away from the all or nothing thinking and repositioning our goal to be responsive rather than calm. We've come to carry this unrelenting pressure on our shoulders. So many of us grew up in situations with yelling or emotional invalidation, and we don't want to continue those patterns. But when we hold ourselves to these rigid expectations to never make mistakes, never raise our voice, never say something snippy or react negatively, we unintentionally set ourselves up for failure. And it ends up backfiring when we feel so much stress and pressure that it impacts our mental well-being and primes us to be more reactive. This shift towards responsive as the goal feels powerful. We can hold space for our own feelings, acknowledge what we are experiencing, and still show up with respect for our children, and repair when we make mistakes. I also want to emphasize what Dr. Cindy said about if we feel ourselves bubbling over often or becoming triggered easily, instead of falling into shame, we can listen to what our bodies are telling us about our needs. It's so important to think about our needs and advocate for them. And it plays a major role in the way that we are able to show up in the world. None of this work is particularly easy. But the more we can practice compassion and understanding for ourselves and our emotions, the better we can show up for our children and model for them how to navigate the very real emotions that they're going to experience in the world. I would love to hear your thoughts on this episode. Take a moment to send a DM on Instagram or leave a review. If this resonated and you've got a mom friend who could also use a dose of self-compassion, send this episode their way. And if you're struggling with this yourself, I want you to know that you are not alone. Working with a mom therapist can help us identify where our patterns are coming from, recognize and advocate for our needs, and build the skills we need to stay regulated and practice self-compassion. Book a free 15-minute virtual consult with one of our mom therapists at momwell.com/booking. That's momwell.com/booking. I'll see you right back here, same time, same place next week, where I'm being joined by Lauren McGoodwin, CEO of Career Contessa, to discuss how moms can find fulfillment at work and also how to bust the dream job myth. You don't want to miss it. I'll see you right back here next week. I can't even begin to tell you how happy and honored I am that you choose to spend your time here with me each week. If you're looking for resources or links from today's show, or you need a refresh on anything we've talked about, visit our show notes. You can find the link in the episode description, or you can head directly to momwell.com/learningcenter. To join the Momwell email list and be the first one to know about new episode drops, insider info, or freebies, head to momwell.com/newsletter. Join me next week. Until then, remember that you have to be well to mom well.
Settling is not an option for me.
Everything I desire is already mine.
What if you can have it all?
Because every day is for the girls.
Hello, hello. Welcome to For the Girls podcast, hosted by Victoria Alario, for the girls who want more. Listening to For the Girls will have you ready to raise the bar, stop settling for the bare minimum, and start believing you can have it all, and step into the 2.0 version of you. You can catch a new episode of For the Girls every Monday across all podcast platforms. Until next time, girls.